You're inside the film pod.
Alrighty, thanks for joining us inside the film pod. I'm Adam Filmy Film, and with me is Edgar Talk Ram. Edgar, how you doing?
I'm okay, and how are you?
Better than you, because I'm not stuttering anymore.
Nope,
because we're done watching The King's Speech. Because we watched The King's Speech. That's the movie. We went right into it. Usually I say something stupid, and then we say what the movie it is.
Now
anyway,
you're
we watched The King's
stupid.
Speech, coming cultured, and also, kind of, because last year, it was last year's Oscar winner, and the Oscars just happened Sunday. This is, we were recording on Tuesday afterwards, and you are listening to it Wednesday or after. I don't care when you listen to it, as long as you listen to it.
Yeah,
Oscars, Hollywood's biggest night. But first, I just want to say, I am under the weather, so.
And as am I.
Really?
Yeah, it's a part of a degree. I can't really breathe.
You don't sound under the weather, though.
No.
I've been already sick before in one episode. There was an episode a while back I was sick. Why am I sick again? God damn. And you're just peaches and cream here.
I have a strong immune system.
Yeah.
What can I say?
Because you licked dirt as a kid.
Yeah,
anyway.
I licked dirt as a kid.
So, yeah, if I'm coughing and doing icky stuff, I apologize. But anyway, on to Hollywood's biggest night, the Oscars. Edgar, did you see the Oscars?
No.
Neither did I.
No. I wouldn't watch it anyway. But I watched last year's and I was so turned off by the idea. I mean, I heard that last year's was probably one of the worst shows.
I've heard, yeah. It's the worst. You've seen it. Would you say it's terrible?
With the exception of the little skit that they did to blend in all the movies for Best Picture.
Oh, yeah. I remember. I saw that part.
It was pretty toned down. It was very slow. And I felt like I was watching some sort of convention. You know?
Well, it's a clap show, no matter how you really look at it. And this year they went back to Billy Crystal again. It was just like, you know, they see, it's like the Oscar people are so out of touch sometimes, all the time. Like, they're like, hey, let's do Eddie Murphy. He's funny, right? The kids still like that guy, right? Like, no, that was about two decades ago. Oh. Yeah. And then Brett Ratner and the whole gay thing. Hey, let's do, oh, you know who's funny? Billy Crystal. He's relevant still, right? No, that was a lot more decades ago.
I don't know. Billy Crystal is, well, he's a hit and miss kind of guy for me. And for you, he's just a miss all around.
No, not all the time. I would say hit and miss, too. He's just, to me, he's just mild. Not really that interesting.
It's not that he's funny or anything. It's just, he's a memorable guy, and that's all I can really say.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the best role he's ever had was as the gravedigger in Hamlet.
Which I think should have went to Robin Williams. Robin Williams instead played the other. I think if they switched the roles, I would have been happier.
I think
Robin Williams totally
to
should have played the Gravedigger. Gravedigger number one or whatever. If I don't think he has a name in Hamlet.
Mm.
Yeah, it's just Gravedigger.
Gravedigger's just
Robin Williams should have gotten that role.
I was amazed to see Robin Williams in that.
Yeah, it was like there. It was a surprising amount of stars not playing very big roles.
Well, there were cameo appearances.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, though.
So, Edgar, what have you seen recently?
Okay. I can only claim that I've seen one movie in full. And I've quoted this on my Facebook, not personally the Facebook page, but I saw Kung Pao Enter the Fist.
It was on TV, wasn't it?
Well, I actually watched it on Netflix.
Oh, I caught it on it was just on TV. That movie holds a special place in my childhood. I know it's a stupid, dumbass movie, but nostalgia makes it better than it really is.
But for those of you who don't know the movie, it's a redubbing of an older, would you say Chinese film?
It's like two different Chinese films, but it's not really a redubbing. I mean, Steve Odenkirk really just has his way with that movie.
It's just, he basically redubs all the tracks and just picks at it.
And he puts himself in it. He, you know, inserts himself in it.
And I thought it was just plain hilarious. And it was the first time I can honestly say I've seen it in full, because I've always been able to catch it on cable bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it in its entirety, just never in one whole sitting.
Yeah.
And I never realized just how stupid it was.
You know, Steve Odenkirk is the guy that did the Thumb movies, if you've seen any of those. And then he also, I think, I don't know if the show's still going anymore. Jimmy Neutron. That's Steve Odekirk. Yeah. Just fun facts. The more you know. So, have you seen Kung Fu Hustle?
Yeah, I actually have.
What would you? I actually like Kung Pao better.
Well, I can't really say I like Kung Pao more than Kung Fu Hustle because I've only seen Kung Fu Hustle once.
Mm-hmm.
And that movie isn't dubbed in English, so I can't really compare them in that way.
Well, it is dubbed in English, but I mean, it's not the same. I mean, it's just it's a foreign Kung film Hustle, comedy. And
is Kung Fu Hustle dubbed in English?
That's what I just said. Yeah.
The one that I saw was just subtitled.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, it's also dubbed. It doesn't make a difference.
Well,
the subtitled one probably better because you hear the actual actors.
The only thing I can really say is Kung Fu Hustle, I can't even compare the two because one's a spoof. One's just making
one's fun a spoof of and one's just, I don't even know what it is.
And the other one is simply like Looney Tunes in combination with the genre.
Which one are we talking about?
I'm saying Kung Fu Hustle is more like Looney Tunes. Because it's just...
See, I'd say it the other way. I don't know. They're both spoofs, and they're both like Looney Tunes. Although, I would... Yeah, Kung Fu Hustle is more like Looney Tunes because they have that weird-ass chase scene that comes out of nowhere.
A lot of the stuff is just out of nowhere.
It's... Same with Kung Pao.
But Kung Pao, the reason I say it's more like a spoof is... Because it's intentionally meant to be bad to point it out, and it makes so many like more cultural references from my memory. Like I said,
that's been true. A while. Like the thing is with Kung Pao is it's more from an American perspective watching kung fu movies, while Kung Fu Hustle is really just a Chinese movie making fun of a genre.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I like them both, but I can honestly say I found a lot more joy in watching Kung Pao because there's so many things in that movie that are so memorable, even down to the lines, because they're so stupid.
Gnaw bad.
Yeah, gnaw
bad. My favorite thing in that movie is right in the beginning where you the baby, not the fight scene, after the fight scene where the baby escapes and is rolling down the hill. Like, already right there, I'm laughing my ass off because the baby's rolling down a hill. It's going, hitting rocks and stuff. But then it rolls down, and there's that lady, and she's walking over, and she sees the baby, and she picks the baby up. She's, oh, so cute. And then she walks past the road to the next cliff and just rolls the baby off that cliff. So it keeps going.
I
don't know. It's just like, I didn't see that coming. Because, like, I already had the joke, and I was like, okay, this is funny. And then, and, like, what makes it so funny is because it, like, works. It, like, makes sense. Because, like, the baby's traveling, and, like, in my own head, like, you want the baby to keep going, sort of. And so, like, she lets the baby keep going. I don't know. It's terrible.
Well, I can just say, for a shorter film, considering, like I say, I always compare movies. Like, once it hits 90 minutes, it usually means... They had enough creativity for that? Because like I said before in a movie, rule of thumb, if the movie doesn't really hit 90 minutes, they usually don't have enough creativity or enough money or anything to really make a movie good.
I don't know if you can make such a generalization. To me, I don't worry about that kind of thing.
Well, I do, because sometimes I hate sitting for 2.5 hours just watching Drek. You know, just watching something bad because it's so elongated. And I'd prefer to watch a short movie that's fun to watch.
Yeah.
But, no.
No, like, I totally agree. Like, even though I'm, like, an art person, I don't really like really long movies. Like, to me, short movies are fine and, like, often preferable. Because, like, if you go too long, you know, but to me, that's pacing can really, that'll make the difference. Not really so much time, but the way you use your time, which we'll talk about with the King's Speech later. I have some things to say about pacing.
All right. And, as for this one, since I know you've seen it, do you want to give it a score?
For Kung Pao? I don't know. I'm too biased for the movie to really give it a score. Like, to me, it's such a kid thing. Like, I have so much nostalgia for that movie. Like, I even really see how it's stupid. So, I have no idea. Watch it at home. But
I would say it's a theater, but for the guilty pleasure. Just simply for the
guilt. If you like kung fu movies, I guess.
Because, I mean, yeah, it's a bad movie. It's really stupid. It's definitely a movie that people want to watch stoned. It's just that kind of comedy.
You don't have to watch it stoned. It's not like Seth Rogen humor. You don't need to be stoned to watch it.
No, but it's that kind of film that you can enjoy like that because it's like you'll just laugh. And it wants you to laugh at it.
Yeah, well, I guess you in stone, you can, instead of saying stone, you say when you're in a weaker state of mind, whether that be a child, because, you know, I watched that when I was a kid, or high or drunk.
I could tell you, I would never have my child watch this.
Unless your child is stoned? No.
I'll just give him some Valium. It's okay.
Yeah.
Now, what have you seen?
Ah, finally, Edgar. Not really, actually. Not finally. But I saw two movies. Yeah, I actually saw two movies for once, and not including our feature film, so three movies.
More than me.
Willikers. I saw, what's it called? Before the, I don't even remember the title of it, because it's a long thing. It's like, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, I think that's the title. And it has Philip Seymour Hoffman and Ethan Hawke. Those are two main guys. And,
give a synopsis.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing right now. It's sort of, it's not a heist movie. It's kind of like Reservoir Dogs, actually. That's really what it reminds me of. Although it's not, like, the same style or anything. It's just, like, it's a heist movie that takes place around the heist as opposed to being about the heist. Like, because with Reservoir Dogs, you know, you don't even actually see the heist. It's just, it starts off afterwards, and then you get little bits before, but the heist is never actually the center of the movie. You do actually see the quote-unquote heist in Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, but, like, it's not about the heist. It's about, like, the stuff going on around it. And so, and like Reservoir Dogs, it jumps around in time, and they do, like, I don't know, this, like, flashy kind of flicker, kind of like Easy Rider effect, where they like show like frames quickly back and forth when they jump through time. And so Philip Seymour Hoffman and Ethan Hawke are brothers, and it's like sort of like a Greek tragedy. That's how my uncle like described it to me. He was the one that wanted me to watch the movie, and I watched it, and it is basically a Greek tragedy. Like, it's just like bad stuff happens. This is not a movie you want to watch if you want to feel happy, because just bad stuff happens and then it just gets worse. And like, it's like a Greek tragedy because this whole parental thing. I don't want to like go into spoilers, but bad stuff happens with the parents too.
Do you know any Greek tragedy that it actually follows?
Yeah, I don't think it's straight up based on any specific one, but it's got that whole kind of thing, like with Oedipus, you know, you got that whole bad stuff happening to the whole family.
Pernus envy.
Huh?
That's Oedipus. No, right? Yeah.
What?
No. I'm thinking of something else. Now keep going.
Did you say pregnant zombie?
No.
I don't know what you said.
Isn't...
Oedipus is the sex with the mother and killing the father.
No, I know what Oedipus is, but I forget, because in Freudian, one of them is...
Oh, there's the Oedipus effect, and that's... But that's actually not related to Oedipus, the actual story. But... The other movie I saw, which is so weird because this movie's been in my life so much, is The Big Lebowski. Again, this isn't the first time I saw it. It's just happened to my uncle. It's because, like, I went bowling with friends from work, and, like, because of that, I was thinking about The Big Lebowski, and before that, I was thinking about The Big Lebowski, and I kept telling my uncle, you know, it's a good movie, you gotta see it. And, like, I went bowling, so I was thinking about it, and then, like, the next day... Like, I come home from work, and my uncle's watching it. I'm like, hey. And he's like, yeah, I remember you guys saying something about it, so I was like, I'm going to watch it. I was like, oh, okay. And then I watched. I didn't actually see the whole thing. I watched, but it was, like, most of it. I watched most of it with him. And we're going to have a Coen Brothers day, so I don't want to get too much into that. But
did it Big get Lebowski better?
Is must-see for me.
Okay.
Oh, it's, like, the third, fourth time I've seen it. Big Lebowski is just so much fun. Like,
I haven't seen it a single time.
That'll probably be one of the ones for our Coen Brothers Day. Like that, No Country for Old Men won't be on our Coen Brothers Day because that won Best Picture. We'll need to see like that and Fargo, which I have not seen. Serious Man is a good
just
one.
Just those three. I mean, that. Going for four again, remember what happened.
Yeah.
Oh, and before we go on, I actually saw another movie that just occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was in theaters. Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance.
Nick Cage.
Yeah, Nick Cage. And
how many times did he scream and freak out?
Too many.
Really? Did he do it a lot?
Not really. There was just one really elongated scene.
Uh-huh.
Where he was on a bike and he did. But for those of you who don't know the story, I'm not going to spoil it for you because it's just, it's a relatively generic story.
I don't think the story at all matters that much.
No, because it's like really, a second
it's thought. Like convoluted. Something about the devil and Nicolas Cage gets powers. I don't fucking care.
Well, I haven't seen the first one.
Uh-huh. So, I have seen. So between the two of us, we've seen both of them.
Okay, but see, I'm probably going to sound kind, and it'll probably be controversial because of the fact that I went into the movie thinking it was going to be a shit film.
Mm-hmm.
But the effects were nice. I mean, they were gorgeous for the fact of how low of a budget this film had it.
Mm-hmm.
$75 million opposed to $125 million from the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the other one looked like shit. This one, I'm not saying it looked...
Graphics, you know, getting better and cheaper.
Yeah, and I went in and I was like, Ghost Rider, he's okay. I mean, he's nothing special in the comic books. He's just some
guy. You follow the comic book?
Not so much Ghost Rider.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ghost Rider never really appealed to me, but after watching this movie, I'm like, I can understand the appeal. He's really, really cool. He's basically a
evil demon. Knievel, but with superpowers.
Except they forgot one big thing, because I did research after this. He has a shotgun that they never use.
Well, he's got his chains in this one. He's all like Kratos, God of War style.
I would say more Scorpion.
Oh, yeah.
But
and he's got the flaming skull and everything, too.
But the film had something that I really enjoyed, and it was a grindhouse feel. Uh-huh. It looked grimy.
Well, the guys behind this movie were also the guys behind Crank.
And Gamer.
Ew.
So
I haven't seen Gamer, but it looked terrible. And I think Ben saw it and he said it was terrible.
Okay, let me put this. I don't like Gerard Butler. He's a complete...
Really?
He's almost a complete miss for me.
Most I liked of the him movies, in 300.
Okay, I liked him in
surprisingly enough.
But I liked the movie because of the art style more than I liked it because of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And since it's a comic book movie, but...
Yeah.
I don't really like him. He's a really... He's not like Skull and Crossbones to me.
He's Phantom of the Opera.
Funny thing about that, my girlfriend loves that movie.
I think all women do. It's a requirement for women, isn't it?
Well,
it's like tits, vagina, loves Phantom of the Opera. Boom, you're a woman. I am cursing a lot. I have a cold.
If it I'm makes like kind you
of
feel
out
better.
Of it right now. So, okay, yeah,
but. It's funny because I looked up like critic scores on that and they hated it, but viewers
loved
it. I think
Roger Ebert probably liked it. Actually, I have no idea.
No, but it's like it's so polarized between the viewers and the critics.
Yeah.
And I've kept looking in movies and see which one has the most polarized things, and that's probably the most.
Because
acceptance by critics was like 30%. Acceptance by audience is like 80-something percent. But back to the movie, it had that grindhouse feel. Which I really, really enjoyed.
Phantom of the Opera? No, I'm just kidding. I would watch Phantom of the Opera if it was grindhouse style.
Then you want to watch the one with Robert Englund.
I don't know who that is.
Freddy Krueger.
There's a Phantom of the Opera with him? Does he kill people in their dreams?
No.
Aw.
Well, technically, but I'll have to get into that some other time. Though, it's the grindhouse thing that appealed to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it was a... Stupid movie. I had to turn off my brain. And I knew the moment I walked in, I told Ben, who I went in with, I was like, you cannot bring logic into this
movie.
You
saw it with Ben. You didn't invite old Adam.
You were busy buying your computer.
What do you mean? Oh, I was at work. Yeah, okay. That's okay. You didn't even invite me, though. Although, I guess I told Ben I was at work, so you guys knew. I'll let you slide this time.
I went with Ben, and he immediately said, I told him, first thing, do not bring logic into this. We're watching a movie with the guy with the flaming skull head.
And it's a Nicolas Cage in 2012.
So I'm like, don't bring logic into this.
Yeah.
And we're there, and he brought up the whole... Because they brought up the whole concept of a 2,000-year-old wine. It's probably vinegar by now. I'm like, what did I say about logic?
And it's no one knows that except Ben and chefs. I wouldn't know that.
I wouldn't either. Well, they make a joke about it later.
Oh, okay. Should be a Twinkie by now.
They actually...
Like, it reverse, like, it retrogrades. There's actually a Twinkie joke in there, too. Twinkie.
There's a Twinkie joke in there, too, because they have a bad guy, the main villain, besides Mephisto, I guess it's...
Mephisto? What? Never mind. I don't think you can have a Twinkie joke anymore. It's 2012.
No.
Twinkie jokes are kind of, you know, that's so 1990s, man.
The main antagonist is a guy named Blackout who, in the movie, has different powers than he does in the comics, apparently. And he can decay things at the touch of everything.
Oh, he was in the first one.
Is there? There's another guy in this one, and he decays everything with a touch. And you see him, like, pick up an apple, and it decays. Bread, it decays, and he picks up a Twinkie.
And nothing happens.
Nothing happens.
Nice. I like that, actually.
And... I'm just going to say, for its grindhouse appeal and its B-movie, if you go in just saying, I'm going to have fun, it's a must-see.
Uh-huh. But it has no artistic value, is what you're saying.
No, it's beautiful. To
see. Oh, well, when I say artistic, I mean, like, art, not just pretty.
Yeah. No, if you go in there just to see, like, a grindhouse film, definitely worth it. But the one biggest complaint that I say is... It should have gone for an R rating.
Yeah, I was going to say, in this movie, not R, so it's not going to be... For Grindhouse, it's going to be pretty tame.
Yeah, but it gives off that feeling, like, for a tamer...
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, you want Grindhouse, and now, go watch Hobo with a Shotgun. Or Machete, because there's lots of blood and gore in that. You get your Grindhouse feel and, you know, no holding back.
True, but it's... I guess...
But it's Nicolas Cage, and he gets to scream.
I'm just saying, because of the appeal of a flaming skull head on a person, that in itself should be worth a Grindhouse appeal. And let alone, it should have been an R rating. Mm-hmm. And I will always argue that, but the thing is, they chose not to. Because they want to get the biggest audience they can, and you can't do it with R.
Yeah.
They did that with Punisher.
They did it with... Weirdly enough, The King's Speech, although, I don't know, I'll just talk about it now. For some reason, they re-released a PG-13 version of The King's Speech so they could get more people to see it, which to me, like, you're going to take away, like, the best scene of the entire movie, but I don't want to get into that right now.
We'll get into it.
Yeah, we'll get into it when we get, you know, into our review.
I didn't even know that they made a PG-13.
Yeah, they re-released it in theaters, PG-13.
That's funny.
It's really stupid.
They did the opposite with The Punisher, like I said. The Punisher, it was Warzone. It was originally PG-13, then they upped it to an R rating. Mm-hmm. And because of the R rating, their budget of $25 million, I think it was, they only grossed like $10
million. Yeah.
So they grossed like nothing. And I think that's what they're trying to do. They're like, R-rated films, not for us. Not going to work. You don't want to get a superhero that's R-rated, which is stupid because some of them need that.
Yeah. Especially like Ghost Rider. I don't know. To me, it's like it's a biker with a flaming skull. The whole appeal is like violence. He doesn't have much else.
No. You know,
it's not like Batman where you have like, you know, justice and, you know, you have some deeper plot. This is a biker who was an Evel Knievel stunt driver, the flaming helm, like flaming skull. Like, you know, if you're going to be dumb... And go all the way dumb, right? You know?
Exactly.
Nothing worse than tame dumb.
I don't know. But like I said, I'll take back my must-see for the Grindhouse and make it maybe... Because it's true, it's too tame to be just a full-on Grindhouse. Maybe a matinee, but if you're
matinee too, if you're a Grindhouse fan.
Yeah, matinee, but if you're just willing to watch something fun...
Uh-huh. What if you want something good? Would you just say no? Don't even just completely skip it.
If you're gonna go see something good, why would you consider it?
Okay, that answered my question.
It's
yeah.
You wouldn't consider it.
I had a good segue, but it was too early. When we were talking about Phantom of the Opera, you were saying that there was a big disconnect between critics and viewers. Well, that completely relates to the Oscars. And instead of news, we're gonna have like an Oscar thingy, I guess. So yeah, news/Oscars.
News.
All right, so should we start at the? I guess we should start at the bottom. How do we want to do with the Oscars?
I don't really know.
I'm not going to start anywhere. I'm just going to do the ones that feel like are worth it talking about.
Before we do that, it would just be best actor, best actress.
I don't know. I'll just read it here.
Best director?
I got it up here. We'll just go through it.
But what would you say?
Get it up on your iPhone so you can also talk with me. But so I called it. The artist won. I called it. Me and everyone else on Earth called it. Everyone knew the artist would win Best Picture. You know who won Best Picture? The artist. Whoop-dee, goddamn diddly-doo-dad. I do want to see it. But if we want to, you know, throw it to the lighter side, Brett McKenzie won Best Song. Flight of the Conchords, if you know that. You don't.
Can't say.
That's the only other place. That's like the only place you're going to know Brett McKenzie. That's cool.
I always hear you talk about it, but
yeah,
I have no clue.
I like Flight of the Conchords. Good show. But yeah, he won his Oscarino. You know what Jermaine was doing recently? And by recently, I mean like a couple of years ago. Dinner for Schmucks. You remember the artist dude in Dinner for Schmucks?
No,
Guy, they go to his like art exhibit or something, or they go to his house and they see paintings, and like there's this painting of him and he's got like animals and stuff, and where his penis is a snake.
Oh yeah.
And like he's like, do you know what this picture, this painting makes me think of? And he's like, your penis? He's like, exactly. I don't know. I liked him in Dinner for Schmucks.
I didn't like.
I know you didn't like Dinner for Schmucks. Anyway, Hugo and the artist swept. We got best costume, artist, best cinematography.
Well, which
Hugo,
one won what?
Best art, Hugo. Huh?
Oh, never mind.
Yeah. Best sound, Hugo. Best original score, artist.
Which is
Oscar. Oscar. I mean, Pixar. Almost the same thing. So, but Pixar did not win Best Animated Short Film. La Luna was Best Animated Short Film has been known as Pixar Junior, sort of like the, because you know they almost always win the Oscar for Best Animated. Of course, not this year. So this year they just lost both. They didn't win anything because they weren't
it
even nominated, because Cars 2 is their movie this year or last year, and La Luna was their short, and it lost to The Fantastic Flying Books of Mr. Morris Lessmore, which I saw on the YouTube, and I've not seen La Luna, so I can't really compare. I will say The Fantastic Flying Books is good, but kind of simplistic. Its message is really obvious, like right from the start, and they kind of just shove it down your throat the whole rest of the thing.
Well, we'll explain it for everyone else.
It's like 15 minutes. I don't know. Just go and watch it. It's on YouTube. It's just about, it's hard to explain. Like, it's about this guy and books, and the message is read books, and books make you feel alive, and books make books alive. Happy books, 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 books. That's basically the message. So, like,
so just go buy a Kindle?
Yes.
It was elongated Kindle advertisement. That's how I'm understanding it. Just go read books.
I know they should have issued it. Brought to you by Kindle. No, it's
use
more
it
from actual books is the thing, though, not Kindle. Like the Mr. Lessmore or whatever doesn't have a Kindle. It's that would have solved a lot of his problems in this movie, But
go to forest trees to go buy books.
No,
that's pretty much
it. Like the thing is, like, I really didn't like the first 10 minutes of it, and it's only 15 minutes. I like the later half of the film, but it is all right. So I can see why it won.
So let me get
it's straight. Worth the 15 minutes. So this 15 minutes, yeah, go ahead and see it. It'll be a 15 minutes well spent, I guess. But I don't know.
What if they're not?
Huh?
What if I choose not to? What happens if someone doesn't like it? What would you say?
Oh, it's whatever. I don't know. It's okay. Like,
it's nothing spectacular.
I've seen Pixar shorts, you know, better than that.
But this year they didn't make anything.
I really want to see La Luna. La Luna, from what I like read about it, looks good. But I've heard like multiple people say they like La Luna more. But no one's like incredibly disappointed, I don't think.
I think people are just happy to finally see someone else, you know, take the throne.
Yeah.
Because if you said, how many years straight now is it that they've won that?
I have no idea about short, but Pixar, every year, Pixar has made a movie. They've won every movie except Cars and Cars 2. Pixar has won Best Animated Feature.
Seriously? So,
yeah, they kind of have a lot. Rango won Best Animated, if we want to segue that way.
Yeah, I actually haven't seen Rango, though.
I want to see Rango. I like the art style. It looks pretty cool.
In looking on this, as you were saying, all these people that sweeped, I didn't expect for actresses to win. You know, Meryl Streep, I didn't even know that she was in a movie until just recently.
Iron Lady. Come on, Edgar. Shh, don't let them know that you're not all knowledgeable and know everything. Then they'll know you're human and they won't listen to you anymore.
I am God.
Yeah, like, I don't know why they even gave it to Meryl Streep. It's like, I guess she got tired of not always winning. She needed, you know, one more just because.
You know, she'll just add it to her shelf that's probably already tipping over. Yeah. Because there's so many on there.
Oh, thanks. I'll just put this next to my other Oscars. Here you go.
This one's just the shitty Oscars, so I'll just throw it in the garbage. Just die. No. And looking at these, the people who were also on Williams, Rooney Mara, Viola Davis, and Glenn Close.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to our podcast for A Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, you'd hear my feelings about Rooney Mara.
I wouldn't at all give her Best Actress for it. She does a very good job, but Best Actress, nah. She didn't demonstrate enough in that movie. Not saying that she's not good enough as an actress, I'm just saying for that role, nah.
And that's
judging by the competition, I guess, then yeah, I can see why Meryl Streep won. It's relatively the Oscars. Not as bad as last year, though, which is when the King's Speech won. But Woody Allen chalks up another Best Writing Original Screenplay. You know, he's got a number of those now.
We'd have one of his days, too.
Huh?
We'd have a Woody Allen
day. Oh, definitely. Too. That goes without saying.
We might have to do like two or three.
Yeah. Woody Allen's kind of got a large film. He does a movie a goddamn year.
Yeah.
Like, we should just, as well as becoming culture, we should just have a Woody Allen thing.
Fair enough. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah,
Best Actor for the artist. You like how I said the name? That's accurate, actually. That's really how you pronounce it. If you look at the phonetic, no.
Yes, because everything's phonetic.
So, and, yeah, Best Director went to the artist, like, almost always Best Picture and Best Director are the same. Like, I don't know, to me, Best Picture and Best Director are practically the same. And it's, like, weird because when I think Best Picture, I feel like in my head, like, the director should be the one to accept that award. It's not. It's always, like, a producer or something like that. So, like, they have Best Director also, which the director, of course, accepts. I don't know. I always felt like there's some weird... I understand why, because you can have, like, a movie that's directed really well, I guess, not be the best. I don't know. To me, I would just combine the awards, seriously.
Well, the reason I would say, as opposing to you, is because it could be directed well, but it's usually the producers who can overrule anything the director says.
Which is, to me, bullshit.
It makes sense, though, because if you're putting your own money into something, you should have control over how it comes out, or you should be able to say what you want to happen
over the director. I guess, but to me, it's like leave art to the artists and not to the investors. And, like, to me, a movie is a director's. You know, you don't have the producer's cut. Well, yeah, you do. But I mean, like...
Yeah, you do. That's everything that's the
one.
That's
the theatrical one. I'm just saying, like, you know, the one that comes after is the director's cut. Because it's, like, it's his movie. To me, like, a movie is the director's movie. He's the guy. To my understanding of how movies are made, like, it's supposed to be in the hands of the director. I mean, it's just the director for... If you listen to that name, he's the one who talks to the actors. He's the one, you know, like... He's, like, the guy.
But once again, it might be his movie,
mm-hmm.
but it's not
his money.
More often than not, it's not his money being.
Yeah, unless you're like George Lucas
or Steven Spielberg at times.
Yeah, Does he produce his own movies?
I think he's produced maybe one or two. I'm just saying at times because he's.
Yeah, well, he's producing like everything left and right now.
Now,
like he's producing everything.
He has too much money.
Falling Skies is coming back. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Which is kind of weird.
No, but I can understand why the producer's accepting it. But I agree with you completely. The director is the one with the eye. The director is the one who understands what he wants you to see.
Yeah.
The producer could just tell you, hey, not this.
Which is, to me, you know, that's like the classic, like, studio versus artists kind of thing. Where, like, you know, money gets in the way of art.
But then again, I mean, there's multiple producers out there who have actually pretty much controlled the way that the film is made. Or have added a lot to it. And one that I always laugh at is Transformers 3 specifically. Which, by the way, did it win Best Visual?
No, it didn't.
Oh, that's a first.
Here you go.
Because you know the story about why... what's her name? Megan Fox didn't come back for this one, right?
No, and I don't care.
Well,
she's got weird thumbs.
That's enough reason. No.
No, she does. To me, that ruins it for a woman. She's got weird hands. Hands would touch, you know, the guy. You got weird thumbs. Don't touch me with those weird thumbs.
Just the thumb.
Like, you know, she has like a good... I don't know. To me, she always looked like, a, you know, a whore. Like, I don't... She's probably... No, she's not probably nice. But I can't say it. She is a whore because I don't know her, even though she probably is because she's an actress. But she just got that whore look, and I feel so terrible for saying that, even though I'm probably justified. Technically, I'm not justified because I don't know her. Okay. But I was never on the Megan Fox bandwagon.
Well, neither was I, but I know this for a fact because it just made me laugh so hard. You know that Steven Spielberg was also an executive producer on that movie, yeah. Right? Well, she ended up calling Michael Bay Hitler for the way that he was directing. Guess who happened to be on set?
Steven Spielberg?
Yeah. And you know he doesn't take too kindly to
uh-huh.
Hitler jokes. And he basically booted her the fuck off.
Uh-huh.
And I just... That's the only reason I know, because it was just so funny.
That is a pretty great story. And like I forgot what I was going to say.
Producers have a lot of power.
Yeah.
They can ultimately change everything.
See, here's the thing. I'm okay because it's Spielberg. Come on now. You know it's me, Adam. Spielberg is seriously, he's my favorite director. He's my idol. I want to be him, basically. I wish I was Steven Spielberg. Or J.J. Abrams, because J.J. Abrams also wishes he was Steven Spielberg.
Like I said, though, it's just... That's all I can really say on that whole
concept. I mean, it's different there because in this case, the producer is an artist, and he's a well-established artist and one of the greatest artists of all time, Spielberg. You know? If it's just like, you know, Professor Timothy J. Moneypants, who's never directed a movie in his life, you know, what right does he have to say in a creative product?
No, but he... I mean, that's what causes like,
to me, if it's Spielberg's word over Michael Bay's word, I will go with Spielberg any second, any day. Let him do that movie, you know?
Well, it's, like I said, it's just the producer can ultimately change a film is mainly my point.
Yeah.
And that's why I think they have the right, because in the end, they're the one who gets to control what you see. While the director wants you to see something, they control everything that you do.
I disagree. To me, or I'm not. Well, I don't disagree. That is the reality. But I think really a movie should be in the hands of the director.
No, and I completely go with you because so many movies have been ruined just because a producer says nope, that shouldn't be there,
or we want this here or something. Yeah.
Yeah, and you didn't explain this enough. So film that again and add it in the front. The director could go, you know, I kind of. Put it in the movie and it's in there. And kind of pick it up as you go through. Nope, put it in the beginning. Just everything you said was wrong.
Yeah.
And they do that with so many movies. Like, they honestly.
Like Blade Runner. And then this is my segue to something completely different. I'm sorry, I remembered this news segment and we're kind of deviating away from the news now. To get back to the news, you'll like this. On Prometheus. So, oh, I didn't segue. I just went to it. Okay, so Ridley Scott, same thing happens to him. Speaking of Ridley Scott, there's a segue. This, you know what TED is? TED is this, like, it's like this website for speeches. That's an oversimplification of what TED is. But basically, it's a website that has speeches on it, like good speeches and things like that. But they made this thing. I don't know exactly who was behind it. Ridley Scott did not direct it. But there's this quote-unquote speech that went on TED, but it's not a real speech. It's Guy Pearce, who's going to be in Prometheus, which I didn't know until just now. I was just like, oh my God, Guy Pearce. Who's also in King's Speech, and he's wonderful in King's Speech, but I'll talk about that later. That could be a segue. Anyway, he does this just amazing speech thing. It's like set in the future. Like, it's viral without being totally like indie viral. It's just, it's publicity and done in a clever way. I wouldn't say it's, you know, viral marketing, because like that's like a gimmick. Like, this is just publicity done in I don't know, I think a clever way, because it's like a speech. Like, Guy Pearce is giving this speech about his company, which is like, was it Wayland Incorporated or something? And it's not directly connected to Prometheus, and like, if you listen to the speech, it, as a sci-fi person, you're gonna wet yourself, because it's really cool, because he talks about Prometheus, the Greek myth, so you know it has something to do with Prometheus, but the stuff he talks about also relates to Blade Runner, because he talks about this company making synthetic robotic humans, and that makes me go like, oh my God, what is even going on? Because Ridley Scott is also, he has a plan to make another Blade Runner film, and like, what if he connects Alien and Blade Runner together, or who knows what's going to happen? Or maybe like, they're not going to be directly connected, but indirectly connected. Like, maybe for Prometheus, there'll be some kind of hint to another Blade Runner thing. But it's, you gotta watch the speech. It's pretty cool.
And maybe from there, he'll actually just have Russell Crowe star. Yeah. Super Gladiator fight right there.
I'm dying. Okay. I'm good. I'm back.
All right. And do you have anything more to say on this?
I like Prometheus, and I'm excited for, I think, was it June 4th, 2012? Wait, it is 2012 right now. Why did I say 2012?
Just to make it clear to audiences that we're going to...
I don't even know if that's the right date. That's just off the top of my head.
Well, I'll check it out meanwhile.
Check it out now. No, I'm just kidding.
Do you have anything else to say? Nothing?
No. What do you have to say about the Oscars?
I disagree with who won. That's all, huh? I could say. I disagree with who won. I haven't seen The Artist, but it just... I haven't seen any
of the nominees except War Horse.
Like, I have to watch them.
I want to see Tree of Life and Hugo.
Like, I want to watch them all, uh-huh, but I really don't feel like they're worth my time, per se.
Uh-huh.
Not because... It's just they don't seem what I would find as fun. They might be award-worthy,
yeah,
by standards, but, I mean, what a movie should be to me is not only meaningful, but fun to watch.
And here's my beef with The Artist. I've not seen The Artist, and I would probably like it. But Best Picture, I don't know. To me, it's just such, like this disconnect between the Oscar viewers, or Oscar, you know, voters and the viewers, the regular people. Like, I gotta clear. Obviously, Oscar voters like this movie because it's a period piece, one, that's always a thing. And two, like, it's talking about the silent era, and it's, like, this told story about sound, like, the coming of sound, you know, and it's just such a nostalgia trip that, yeah, they vote for it for Best Picture. Like, you know, it's okay to like the movie, and okay to say it's a great movie or a good movie, but really, Best Picture, it's not that original to me. To give it Best Picture, like, it's not pushing forward the, like, it's not going into uncharted territories that movies need to go in. Like, to me, you got to do something new. You have to have an original idea, do something truly amazing to really get Best Picture.
You'll see.
Like, the artist may be good, but it doesn't do that.
Well, all I can say is this will be one of those movies that will be forgotten in the, you know, books. Because it's...
It won't be forgotten in books. It'll be forgotten by people. Books will remember. The only ones that will remember. But that and us, when we get to it in our Becoming Cultured segments.
All right, but... It'll be forgotten, and there'll be another movie that's underrated right now that'll be praised like Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. Blade Runner was heavily criticized when it first came out, and now it's considered a classic, and I can't even tell you who won in 1982.
80s sucked. Who cares who won?
Nonetheless, it was... I can't tell you who won in 1982, but I can tell you I like Blade Runner, which came out that year. Mm-hmm. And there's movies that'll be remembered as opposing to... the winners, and that's my biggest disconnect, because, I mean, movies tend to either gain or lose critical reception as they grow older. And Blade Runner is just one example. I mean, there's so many other ones, and not all of them are considered award-worthy, such as Predator. Predator was heavily panned when it first came out. But now it's considered a sci-fi classic because it's a smarter film,
which is fun to watch. I would not put Predator on the level of Blade Runner, though.
No, but I'm just saying it's one of those films that had done that. And there's films that were heavily praised when they first came out and died out. Like, became just...
Yeah, forgotten.
Yeah. And I'm not comparing them to specifically, but I'm just saying films that right now seem horrible to you will be remembered as classics in the near future.
Not always, but yeah.
More often than not, I want to say.
I would not say more often than not. I don't think movies I think are horrible are considered classics in the future. Maybe movies that you think are like, oh, that's good, might end up being considered classic, not necessarily horrible.
Well, yes, but that goes more for the disconnect is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Because, see, when I go into a movie, I always...
Although that's, I mean, there are movies that are considered classics that I think are horrible. Kind of like Rocky or Kramer versus Kramer.
And for me, it's a variety of things.
Yeah.
I mean, there's movies that I can't stand that people go, it's amazing, like E.T.
Oh, wait. I take back saying Kramer versus Kramer is horrible. It's not horrible.
No, it's
not. But not so great. E.T. is horrible.
I didn't like E.T. I hate Wizard of Oz.
You hate Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, I really do. And
that's okay. I can see why.
There's so many other films that people cherish so much that it's like they're classics. I'm like, no, I can't stand them. I mean, I understand the concept and the appeal, but they're just...
Yeah.
I can't get into the same mindset. I can't go into your mind and say and understand why you like it. I mean, there's people out there who like bad movies but don't realize that they're bad movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like Abduction or... I'm thinking of other ones, The Smurfs, or these are just movies that came out last year, but I mean, there's even worse films out there, like
Kung Pao,
or Sharktopus.
No, I would say Kung Pao is better than Abduction.
You haven't seen it, and I would pass the same judgment.
I don't need to. You don't need to step into the trash can to tell it smells, right?
Fair enough. But like I said, there's movies out there that are just horrible. And they're appreciated by people. And those end up getting cult followings. And very strong ones at that.
Yeah.
Like, I always heard that Rocky Horror Picture Show was shit.
Uh-huh.
But it has one of the strongest cult followings out there.
I never heard it was shit.
It
doesn't look particularly great. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
It seems like your kind of thing, though.
Not really. I'm not into musicals, really.
That's true. Same here.
And I would watch it just to see a young Tim Curry in the lead role. But that would be it. Because he grew up into a really freaky-looking dude. I mean, he played Nigel Thornberry and Pennywise the Clown.
Wait, really? That's the same guy?
Yeah.
Really? I thought it was... I know they sound the same.
It's the same guy.
I just didn't know that he actually played Nigel Thornberry.
Nigel Thornberry in The Wild Thornberries. And he was Pennywise the Clown in It, and he had small roles, and I know he had one small role in Home Alone 2.
It was in one of the Scary Movies also.
Two.
Yeah, Scary Movie 2.
And it's just, you see that this is the only leading role he has, and that's what I'd be willing to watch. And that's what I'm saying. It's, yeah. I'd be willing to watch it to understand the cult.
Yeah, how the hell did we even get to Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Who cares? Do you just want to go straight into King's Speech?
I want to at least stay Oscar-related.
Simple.
I had another segue. Or no, I already said it. Yeah, with Guy Pearce. Guy Pearce, Ridley Scott, Oscars. He's in the King's Speech. Oh, fun fact, again. Guy Pearce being in the King's Speech, he was also, before that, in Hurt Locker. Which I don't even remember. Him being... I remember the movie Hurt Locker. And I'm trying to think of who he was in Hurt Locker. I think I know who he was. I think he was, like, the older... Like, one of the captain-y guys or whatever, but...
Captain-y?
Captain-y. You know, I don't know what he is. Captain of some sort. A higher-ranking officer. But I forgot that he was in Hurt Locker, which is weird, because I knew who Guy Pearce was. But he's also in King's Speech. And I didn't know that he's Australian. Because, you know, my first movie experiencing it was Memento, and... You can't tell that, you know, he's like Hugh Laurie. You can't tell that they're not American because they can hide their accent really well or adopt an American accent if you want to be technical.
That's what I'm saying. I will not remember Gladiator 10 years from now. I will remember Memento.
Wait, what?
Remember what I was saying. Films that win awards aren't necessarily remembered.
Yeah.
People will always remember Gladiator as winning that award.
Yeah.
But I'll always remember Memento. And other people will remember other films released that year. And that was my concept. And that's how we got into Rocky Horror Picture Show. That's how we got there.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think it's time to start the King's Speech. So, let's hit it with the synopsis.
Synopsis.
King George VI, played by Colin Firth, has a stammering problem and must find help from a poor, filthy Australian, Lionel Logue, played by Barbossa. Jeffrey Rush. Together, they solve their problems, and by their problems, just King George, in a journey of stammering, love, and the lady woman is the queen. King's Speech. So, yeah, the King's Speech. Basically, to add to the synopsis that I wrote, King Georgie Poo, he's got to make a big speech, or a number of big speeches, actually, really. But, and he has to, he's got a stammering problem, except it's not really like stuttering. It's more like, I think it's like choking. But it's a different kind of stuttering. Like, I saw this little interview thing with Colin Farrell, and he was saying that his inspiration was, like, King George's own accounts was like, he said it's like drowning. And so that was more of his way of doing it. And the Stuttering Association, or whatever association they are, they said that Colin Farrell did a really realistic job of doing it. So I assume that is a different kind of stutter. It's not the kind that we're used to, you know? Like, when I thought like, at first I was like, what is he doing? He's not stuttering. He's, like, because stuttering, I think, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Billy, he stutters right. Like a champ. Colin Farrell does this weird other thing.
Okay.
But, well, yeah, so you want to throw out your dealio? Wait, before that, I guess we should talk about, this is Best Picture winner for 2010, right? 2010 or 2010. Yeah, 2010. I get confused because I think, oh, 2012 Oscars just happened, except it's 2011 Oscars. So yeah, 2010, it beat Social Network. That was the other front runner.
It also beat out Black Swan.
Yeah, Black Swan, The
Inception,
Fighter.
Inception. Toy Story 3.
Yeah, Toy Story 3.
And I think we've named all the bigger titles. I think we're missing two.
All those memorable ones.
Nonetheless, yeah. Do you want me to give me my deal?
Throw your deal at me, Edgar.
I just have to ask: are we spoiling this?
No, no spoiling. We don't need to spoil it.
No, it wasn't really. It's nothing unexpected.
Yeah,
but first thing I have to put is, I felt it to be a very standard inspirational story, mainly a kind of like
a sports movie.
Yeah, except without the sports.
Exactly. The sport is speaking.
But what they did that was right with this film is they made it witty.
Mm-hmm.
And I can appreciate that, but it's, I really can't give much of a synopsis because just to run it down, it's a standard inspirational film, but done
heartwarming
correctly.
Tale between two people of different classes. Classic Oscar bait kind of deal.
And I mean, I can't really say much more. I mean, if
that's
I say
it, that's all, that's your whole deal. That you're gonna leave it all to old Adam here.
It's just if you say anything that I agree with, it's like it was just witty. It was that's what it had mostly going for it, because there's nothing, as you were mentioning earlier, nothing breakthrough about this film.
Mm-hmm.
It was better than I expected. The performances were well made, and like I can't stop saying it was just witty.
Yeah.
And
so
that's it.
Are you got it?
Yeah, like, I really can't say much more. It's
so yeah. For a movie like this, it's hard to really just delve into it. Because it's not exactly, like, it's not like a big world to delve into, because it's based off a true story. And so I'll just, we'll throw it to the tripod. Which one will we start with? We'll start with, well, let's do writing. First, before I get into the trial, I just want to say, overall, it's a very solid film. Like, it's really, there's nothing overtly wrong with it. Nothing like, oh, this element made this whole movie terrible. Like, there was nothing like that.
No, there
wasn't.
There's
nothing that made this thing terrible.
But like I'm saying, it's a standard inspirational film. For me, it's not, it stands out only for the one detail it really has. Besides the characters themselves being engaging, because they were fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you grow the attachment to them.
But anyway, it stands out because
it's witty dialogue.
Yeah,
It doesn't have anything that I haven't seen in the aspect of, you know, you're an underdog or you're kind of like seen down upon and then you kind of rise through the ranks. And that's pretty much it.
So, yeah, that leads real nicely into writing, which is, or the story, which is that the one leg of the tripod I'll start off with. I think that's actually the first one on the website that I list. I think I go story, acting, form, and then prevailing conditions. And so, like, writing, like you said, shove down your throat. It's very witty. I really like the dialogue in this movie. It's, you know, very well done. And some of it was actually not even written by writers. It was actually what they said. It turns out, like, seriously, like, I forget, like a week or something, I don't know, really close to when they were going to start shooting, they found this diary written by Lionel Logue, the speech coach, whatever you want to call him, instructor of King George VI. And like, some of the best lines from the movie actually came from that diary. But, yeah, overall, it's written very well. Like, very snappy dialogue between characters.
It's like real people.
Yeah.
Which is the nice thing.
Because the thing was, like, there wasn't really much known about Lionel Logue. Like, pretty much everything they got came from the diary. And just the writer kind of making up his own little story. But, so, writing, yeah, good, solid, nothing wrong with it. It's written very well.
Can't complain either.
Yeah, you can't really, you know, it's based off a true story, so you can't, like, you know, you can't make it, you know, Inception. It's not gonna do anything fantastical or mystical or anything. It's just gonna stick to what happened and, you know, construct a story around that that's well written, keeps you into it. And so, acting, I feel like that's probably its strongest point, acting. Colin Firth, very good. Jeffrey Rush, also great job. Guy Pierce, kept talking about him. Guy Pierce is great in this movie. He's like my favorite.
See, I'm just glad he bounced. Technically, he fell. Because the last movie I saw him in was not Memento, if you recall.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was cut from one of our episodes, but was Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Uh-huh.
And in that movie...
When was that?
Last year. Late last year.
Okay.
So, it obviously came after.
Wait, last year, like 2011 or...
Yeah, 2011, okay. Late last year. And it wasn't...
Wasn't that good.
He was a good performer.
Yeah.
But he wasn't top-notch.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, I'm glad to see that he didn't lose his, you know, skill.
He was great in King's Speech, as I kept saying. And as I mentioned before, you know, fun fact... I already said the fun fact, but he was also in Hurt Locker right before that. So he's like... Best picture. Except not the main guy in it.
Oh, well.
But, I mean, according to that, then, Prometheus and Lockout are going to win Best Picture. One of them.
Hey, if he's a good luck charm
that way. According to the Guy Pierce formula. What?
You know, if he's a good luck charm that way.
Yeah. Well, and then the artist, though. Watch it like it turns out he is. He's just uncredited. He's like somewhere in the artist.
Memento's just playing in the TV, even though it wouldn't make sense.
So, yeah, Guy Pierce is great. Colin Firth, great. Jeffrey Rush, great. Everybody in that movie, you know, really good. And so, not much to say about either of those two because it's just nice and airtight. And then that leads me to four. More like flying through this tripod.
Because there's not really much to
say. I know. It's just because it's a very simple movie. And that's actually one of its stronger qualities is
better to be simple than to be overconvoluted. Because you don't want to have a film that has 80 million stories trying to be told simultaneously over having just one overarching simple plot that we'll get into with the fourth leg of the tripod. But yeah. For right now, go for form.
So back to form. This is actually what surprised me the most with this movie is the form actually really well done. Not like it's not Spielberg, but he does more sophisticated stuff than I think the average person is going to notice. Like, I particularly love, like, the beginning scenes with Firth and Rush. Their scenes together where, like, where King George is reluctant to actually get speech training from Lionel. Like, he does this framing that's so awkward, but it's done like that on purpose because it gives you that awkward feeling between the characters. Like, first off, he totally like overdoes the framing. Like, he puts the characters on one complete and total side of the frame. Like, you basically just see like Colin Firth's head in the corner, like the bottom left corner of the like whole frame, and so you get this huge space off to the right, and like it's awkward, but that awkwardness helps give you that awkward feeling. You get all this space and like you see the like dirty wall of the guys of Lionel's place, and then does the same thing. And not just that, they're framed ultra to the side, but like it's kind of hard to explain without showing you. But normally with like rules with framing is like when people are talking to each other, you'll have like the guy look, you know, towards the space that I described. He'll, you know, like, let's say Colin Firth is looking to his left, and that will be where the space of the, you know, frame is, like the rest of the frame. He'll look to his left, and then it'll go to the shot of Jeffrey Rush, and he'll be looking to the right. So you have them like looking at each other. And if you like overlaid that, they could be in the same frame looking at each other, but they don't do that. Instead, it's they're looking straight like at the camera. And so it gives it this weird, awkward feeling that, I don't know, it keeps the conversation interesting. I mean, this movie, you know, it doesn't have action scenes or anything like that. It's just people talking. But I feel like the form really helps you get through that. Like, it's edited quite well. It's paced, like, really, like, great. Like, I've been complaining about pacing recently. I've been seeing a bunch of movies that are, you know, mostly talkies. If you want to just put, like, you know, nothing with really straight action. And I've been saying, you know, it's too slow and everything. But, like, I'm not against talkies. It's just, like, recently I've been watching a number of movies that just haven't been edited well, and this movie was edited a lot nicer. It's so much quicker. There's much more variety in the shots to keep you, you know, focused. And combine that with, like, these simple yet effective techniques, the form's actually pretty good.
I can't really say much to that because I wasn't really focusing on it. I was just trying to concentrate on the film and what it was trying to deliver, and it got what I wanted it to say, and I understood what it said.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, it's just such a simple film. Like, I was talking about the flying books of Mr. Morris Lessmore, whatever the hell that, the one that, like, the it throws its message, it shoves it down your throat. The thing is, King's Speech, while being simple and only really having, like, one message, doesn't do that. It has one message, but it doesn't, like, shove it down your throat. Because what it does is it focuses on its characters as much as its message, and with a very simple message, you don't really need to overplay the message. You just, you know, you let the point of the story be there and have interesting characters on the way, on the ride to the, like, point of the story.
Exactly, and that's something that I actually thought they did right with this film.
Mm-hmm.
But that goes back to characters. Yeah. It's just, that's one thing that they overdid, especially, like, with Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
You and I enjoyed it more than you did. Yeah. Of course, you've already said how much
I've had my spiel on Rocky. That is like my one thing. Like every critic in the universe disagrees with me about Rocky. But oh well.
Not necessarily, but it's just those characters might have been interesting at the time, mm-hmm. but they don't like stand up. But these characters, I felt, were kind of more timeless because you'll always see people who are, you know, think that they're always hot-headed and have mm-hmm. to be right and are always against getting help. And then the person who has to kind of be unorthodox with how they teach you and so on and so forth. So I felt like these, they felt more timeless.
Yeah. As although, opposing to one criticism about the characters, although this isn't really a criticism, this is more like for people and their own preferences, like, you might not like how proper and British-y these characters are, but I mean, it's British royalty, so, like, that's how they are, how they were, and how they acted. It's just, there is this sort of distance and, like, less warmth with characters you get. Like Rocky, you know, he's such a lower-class working guy that it's more relatable, while King George VI, even though he's got a speaking problem, is so, like, upper-class and proper and everything. And that was one thing is, you know, they had the whole speaking thing, but there was also the class issue in this movie, and I thought that was totally going to be overplayed, and it was going to be like Driving Miss Daisy or something, where it was be like all about class, and it really wasn't. Like, they had, that was an issue, but I felt like it serviced the characters more than the story. It really wasn't, like, about King George VI, you know, realizing his class, you know, problems and issues and everything like that. It was really just more of a character thing. It just, you know, it helped the banter and the differences between the character rather than giving me a message like, you know, oh, class doesn't matter and all that stuff. Not that that message is wrong or anything, or like I wanted that message or I didn't want that message. It's just like it wasn't overplayed and it really wasn't the point of this story. It was really, like I keep saying, more about the characters rather than a specific message, which I felt like worked for the movie.
And I agree. It worked better than other films.
Yeah. So, all of that said, it sounds like we're totally 100% for this movie winning Best Picture, but that is not the case with me, because this fourth leg is where it goes down. Like, the movie's airtight, movie's solid, but it's not that original of a story. It's really your typical underdog plot. It's very well done, but, you know, it's not original. And originality really comes with the fourth leg. And, like, for me anyways, it's not Best Picture because, as I said before, it doesn't stretch, it doesn't delve into new, undiscovered territory of film. It really just goes back to classic stuff, and it does a good job of that. And it's worth time to watch this movie. But Best Picture, I don't know.
Okay, now you just basically stole the words right out of my mouth.
Oh, we're agreeing again, Edgar. That's going to make this episode so short.
I've seen this movie. Okay, I just haven't seen it with this witty banter, with these better actors.
Exactly.
I've seen this in Rocky. I've seen this in, I don't know, so many other films.
Rudy.
I'm thinking of one. Rudy. Like, there's just so many other films that I've seen this occur. And I mean, yeah, they did it well. Mm-hmm. I'll move on. It's like, you'll just be forgotten.
Yeah, it's very forgettable. That's its biggest problem is, like, to me, a Best Picture movie should not be a movie I'm going to forget about. Not a movie I'm going to throw in with the rest of these other kinds of movies of that same kind of style and genre. To me, Best Picture needs to be something that's going to stand out, something I'm going to remember forever.
That's the thing. That's why it's like, I can't remember a single quote from this film. I can tell you right now, it'll fall under the category of so many things. There's movies out there that I understand that one, and I remember certain things.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to ask me about Rocky, I can tell you more or less about it.
Yeah.
But this movie, it's just, it's going to fall under that. The only things I can remember about Rocky is, one, he boxes.
And two,
you can't understand most of what he says. And the main thing is, like, you understand what they're trying to get through. Mm-hmm. But it's, I can't remember much. It's not really ultra memorable because it's been so watered down.
Yeah.
And no matter what you do to it, it's the same story repeated over and over again.
Yeah.
And I can't accept that. You can't expect me to go, oh, you know, this movie's so great. It's like, yeah, I've seen it. It's like, You've seen King's Speech? No, but I've seen Rocky, and it's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Just smart.
Although, I will say King's Speech I like more than Rocky.
Well, understandable. Yeah. And
like, the thing, I will actually say King's Speech is probably a perfect movie. But it doesn't mean it's, like, a great movie. This is the example I've been waiting for, where, like, it's a perfect movie, but it's not great. It's good. It's airtight. It's solid. It does nothing wrong. Like, to me, that goes a long way. Like, you could have a really cool, great movie, a movie with great ideas and everything, but it could screw it up and hurt itself in the end. Or you can have a movie like this where, like, it's really solid and it doesn't make any mistakes, so it's totally watchable because of that, but it does nothing outstanding.
Well, yeah. I really can't say much more. It's agreed? Just, exactly. That's it. It's... Like, I will keep comparing it to Rocky specifically because it's one we've talked about, and I know that if any of our listeners have listened to all our podcasts, they'll know we've reviewed it.
Yeah.
But there's so many other films that I want to say Remember the Titans is something under that same category.
Yeah. Where it's
inspirational. And then you just can't. I don't want to repeat myself at all.
But we have. It's the sports movie without the sports. It's the underdog tale. And it's been done before. And what sets this one apart, well, it's not really that much set apart, is it's just witty dialogue and its lack of a sports setting.
Pretty much.
But it's the same format. I mean, there's even a training montage. There's a montage. Like, it's kind of hidden, sort of, but it's still a montage.
It's pretty much, instead of using physicality, it's just... smart.
But it is physicality. Even, I mean, in the montage, they have the whole jiggling thingy, and he's, like, rolling around and everything. It's, like, at that point, I was like, this is a sports movie, goddammit.
Well, I have nothing else to say on it, do you?
Well, actually, this episode isn't short. We're totally at the right amount of time.
All right.
It felt quick, though.
It did.
It's because we just flew through it.
Well, do you have anything you want to say?
Yeah. Great movie, or not great, good movie. Best picture, no. Not at all. But... I think this movie is going to go down in history. People are not going to like it because it won Best Picture. But don't let that like get in the way. It's a good movie. So, yeah, I guess this is a perfect way to just go into the ratings. I would give it a theater, really. It's worth the price of admission, you know? The cinematography is actually like better than I expected. The acting is also a thing that really helps it go there, you know? So... it's worth the whole $10. You know what? Back east, my uncle's here. Staying with us? It's not $10 back there. It's like the price of theater there is like the matinee here.
Yeah, well, in Oregon, which is just north of where we are, it's certain theaters only charge $5 for an adult.
That's a ripoff here.
Well, that our sucks. Wages are higher. But the county that we live in is also one of the highest.
That sucks. Oh, well.
Pain. But as for me, yeah, it's a good movie. Would I give it an Academy Award for Best Picture? If it was made 30 years earlier, maybe. But, no, I hate to say it, but I have to give it the theater. It's just right
too
there.
Solid. Yeah.
It's too solid. I would give it a matinee, but it's just, it does it too well for me to give it anything lower.
Yeah, like,
I feel like I degrade it. And I make it seem bad as a film if I give it anything lower than that.
It's just like, the thing is, because it's winning Best Picture, that's really where the controversy is. It's like, you know, the Oscar voters, I don't know, they're doing this because of this whole nostalgia trip that we've been talking about. It's Britain, it's the king, it's the same story as like the sports underdog tale that the voters love so much. But if you really want to be objective about this movie, you really can't say much wrong about it. It's actually a good movie, but it doesn't do anything outstanding or phenomenal or anything like that. And that's why it shouldn't get Best Picture, but it is still kind of worth it. But yeah, it doesn't do anything new. If you've seen this before, this, you know, sports kind of movie before, like, it's not going to like blow your socks off or anything, but it's well done. So yeah.
It's completely understandable. I mean, and I just hope that this year's winner... is, as you were mentioning earlier, you don't see it as original. I hope it's more original than it.
That looks out to be, yeah. We will get to it because it won Best Picture, and we need to become cultured. Alrighty, that's it for the Film Pod. I'm Adam Filmy Film, and you can always contact me at filmyfilm@mail.com and follow me on Twitter at @filmyfilm. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can go to our RSS feed and do whatever you want with that. You can like us on Facebook. You can comment. Edgar, over to you.
Okay, and you can follow me on Twitter at @EdgarTalkaram. And please, if you do follow us on iTunes and do subscribe, write us a review. Follow us on Facebook if you have one. And give us reason why to watch certain movies, even if they're bad movies, especially if it's something as bad as maybe Howard the Duck or the Swedish Star Wars or anything, or even if it's a great movie that you think that we're overlooking and we think is just stupid.
Yeah, we will definitely take suggestions. We are not really on a schedule. I mean, usually we don't know what movie we're doing until like the day before.
Exactly.
Or something. So we don't know until like the weekend.
So just let us know, please. And, you know, throw us out there.
Yeah.
Have people listen to us.
Alrighty, thanks for listening. Alrighty, that's it for the Film Pod. I always freeze there because I'm always going to say my name because I say Film Pod. And so I think of the introduction. Fucking goddammit.